Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
And a very good evening from Damien O'Mara. You are most welcome to the Thursday edition of Game On. A lot to come between now and 7 o'clock. Shortly, we will chat soccer in the company of Conan Byrne. And we'll be live to Old Trafford, to Peter Smith, as what is an elongated week of English Premier League football continues. Much to chat about. Most notably, the unveiling today of the new Republic of Ireland women's national team head coach, which was overshadowed in no small part by a statement released in advance by the previous assistant head coach to the Irish national women's team. We'll make sense of all that in a couple of minutes' time. Round 4 of the Investec Champions Cup to enjoy this weekend. Marcus Horan and Michael Corcoran will brief us on that. We'll be to Shep for our eye on America. And ahead of the showpiece weekend for club basketball in Ireland, Orla Keeling will be with us to look ahead to the National Cup Finals. All of that to come between now and 7 o'clock. We would love to hear from you. Our text number is 51552. Or you will find us across social media at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
And it's great to have your company. Hope you can stay with us between now and 7 o'clock. And as always, if you want to make my job somewhat easier and steer the direction of the conversation, you can do so. 51552 for your text at Game on 2FM. We'll find us across social media. Much to react upon and much to reflect upon from a soccer perspective. And joining us to do that and much more is Conan Byrne. Hiya, Conan.
How are you, Damien? How's things?
Not too bad. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us, as always. It's interesting. I'm not sure how we managed to get to this situation time and time and time again, that we have what should be a good news story for the FAI. We have what should be a landmark day in the career of a very good manager in Carla Ward. But yet, somehow, it's all seemed to be overshadowed by statements today by Colin Healy. And What do you make of all this? To summarise for people that maybe haven't followed the story, Carla Ward obviously unveiled or confirmed yesterday as the new Republic of Ireland head coach. Press conference overshadowed. Eileen Gleeson, Ward's predecessor, her number two, Colin Healy, has accused the FAI of a lack of transparency and compassion. He's indicated that he's going to make a formal complaint after claiming that the FAI's chief football officer, Mark Canham, had given him the impression that his contract would be extended despite Ireland's failure to qualify for Euro 2025. That prompted him to turn down the position as the boss at Cove Ramblers in November. How do we constantly find ourselves in situations where we manage to detract from what should be the story of the day?
Yeah, it always happens. And look, no, I don't really know Colin Healy particularly well, but what I know a lot of people that do know him, and he's a quiet, honest, unassuming man who's a little bit disappointed about what's gone on over the last number of months. He was talked about being offered the manager's job at Cove Ramblers, who have come into significant investment over the last number of years. It was a 2-year contract, would have kept them in the game, with 2 young children. Obviously, for people that might have known, he's gone through loss of his wife last year as well, so he's 2 young children that he has to look after. So it would have been a really good opportunity for him to go and manage Cove Ramblers in the first division on that contract, being close to home with his kids. But with the talk of a new deal with the Irish women's team, and that's how he felt, that it was a verbal agreement between himself and Mark Callum that his contract will be extended alongside Eileen. Now he does mention in his statement that he's not naive and he's been in football a long time, but I think it's very naive on Colin's behalf, in the sense that you can never accept a verbal agreement in football. I think that was one of the golden rules, as we were told about as from very young. And even if it's, and there's this misunderstanding now that's come out today that from Mark Canham in relation to those talks with Colin. So it's really disappointing in that sense that it's overshadowed Carla Ward's appointment, because like you said, always happens in Irish football where great, brilliant news story happens and something overshadows it.
Yeah, so Colin Healy, and the statement was released on his behalf by his agent, who's Graham Barrett, Integrity Sports. Graham, who many people will be familiar with, had a distinguished career himself as a player before becoming an agent. And Colin contests that he was given an indication by Mark Canham, the FAI's director of football, that his contract, the recommendation would be to extend his contract. He then subsequently, alongside Eileen Gleeson, was removed from his position following Ireland's failure to qualify for the Euros. And then the mysterious angle to it all is he then gets a text message, according to him, from the chief executive of the FAI, David Correll, to basically say, listen, I was surprised that you made the decision to step away, when he responds and says he responded by saying, well, actually, it wasn't my decision. So a lot of uncertainty, a lot of differing perspectives on the story itself. And obviously it was an issue that Mark Cannon was asked to address at that press conference to unveil Carlo Ward at the Aviva today.
The decision we made to not renew Eileen's contract was purely a football decision, and that was the same with Collins. All of my conversations before leading up to the final games against Wales and then after that, they were all confidential, and that's the plan to keep that in the way. Obviously not in my control or our control that some of the elements of those conversations have been aired publicly. What I can say, the decision that we make on the renewal of the contract or non-renewal would be based on a review, which is very consistent to what we've done with other teams in the association, with other head coaches. And it's very consistent throughout that would be the case. The staff and players were involved in that review, and it was always transparent that would be the case. And the decision was made then, after an assessment, that we would not renew the contracts of Eileen and Colin, and that was taken to board for approval, and then a conversation happened between me and Colin on the night of the board, same with Eileen, and it was very clearly laid out there would be no renewal of contracts.
So, like, Conan, ultimately, and you and I aren't privy to this because we're not part of the communication chain, but there seems to be an issue around clarity of communication, or certainly the interpretation of messages. But when we look at it at its core, the new manager is completely entitled to come in and appoint her own staff. Granted, Emma Byrne is retained as a goalkeeping coach. And equally, when we look at Eileen Gleeson's term in time, the objective was to qualify for a major tournament. She and her management team failed to do that. So the FAI are entitled to make change.
Oh, absolutely. And I think fundamentally we should be going to Switzerland this summer in Euro 2025, and it's a catastrophe that we didn't make it there. Wales were the better team over the two legs, which was disappointing to say the least, considering our World Cup exploits in 2023, which was just got the nation captivated the nation. But look, we have to get behind Carla now, and like you said, you're perfectly entitled to bring in your own management team, and she's brought in a former Irish international, Alan Mann, as well as her assistant, and Emma Byrne, who has unbelievable experience in women's football, over 100 caps for Ireland and goalkeeper at Arsenal. So she has had a very distinguished career. The thing that probably irks me the most is in terms of the players that have kind of come out, Colin, Lisa O'Sullivan and Caitlin Hayes. I just feel that Colin has been, he's a wonderful coach. He's a very, very, like I said, he comes across as a very honest and unassuming man. And just this, like you said, this lack of clarity and communication between the FAI is not something that we've, it's not new in this association. And I just, in terms of the chief executive, like you mentioned, David Carell and Mark Cannon, there seems to be a miscommunication there surrounding Cotton's interpretation of what was happening. Just that needs to be sorted out. There needs to be proper lines of communication.
Right, well, let's hear from the new head coach herself then. I know there was a clip from the FAI social media channels played on the programme last night, but Carla Lloyd, the new woman in charge of the national side, Carla Ward, the new manager in charge of the national side, I should say, and like a big challenge starts against Turkey in Tala Stadium on the 21st of February, and she is intent on hitting the ground running.
Yeah, I think camp number one, you're going to have to go with, you know, what we've got, and the wider picture is how we can create a pathway for those players over here, how we can help them, how we can utilise them and develop them. So look, first and foremost, let's be very clear, we have to win football matches, so we have to go with what we believe is here and now our best 11.
What about the size of the task that faces you and the squad with just 11 of those European places qualifying for Brazil?
Yeah, it's massive, but that's what we're here for. This is why we take these jobs. There's a huge amount of work to be done, but something I believe that I'm best placed to do so.
So that's the new manager with Joe Stack earlier. I found her quite magnanimous and maybe very well briefed in terms of her media duties over the course of the last couple of days. But realistically, Conan, there's no shying away from the fact that it's a very small window of opportunity in terms of the places on offer. And if we are to qualify for a World Cup in a couple of years' time, we need to be looking at games like Turkey Friday, a couple of weeks' time, and taking 3 points.
Yes, Turkey, and then obviously Slovenia a couple of days later away from home there as well, and finally are in April away to Greece. They're the three teams in League B2 that we need to get overcome first and foremost, and they're the games that we need to win. We all remember how difficult it was both at the World Cup in Australia in 2023, but also how difficult it was to get there. And it's going to be, looks like it's going to be harder this time. And like you say, Carla Ward, she comes across really well in her interviews. And in terms of her experience as a manager, she's managed at domestically at the highest level in the WSL, but with Birmingham, and then moving across to the Via to Aston Villa, probably wasn't a popular choice at the time. But she signed Rachel Daly, and look what she did in terms of the national side, and being the golden boot in that WSL. Mm. Got to an FA Cup semi-final with Aston Villa, and yeah, she seems to have all the traits to be a top coach, and now she wants to put her feet into the international setup. And look, we all have to get behind her. All maybe today has overshadowed it with the Colin Healy, what he has put out there and from his agency, but at the same time, we need to get behind Carla, and massive game against Turkey and Slovenia next month.
Let's switch attention then to the Premier League, and like, it's been a bounty of matches to enjoy over the course of the last couple of days. The Emirates last night, Arsenal, Tottenham Hotspur, like, I think the TV coverage likened it to a basketball game. It was so frenetic, and it feels a massive win for Mikel Arteta, only 3 or 4 days after people were talking and questioning fairly extensively whether his time at Arsenal had come and gone.
It's crazy though, isn't it, when you're talking about Mikel Arteta, 2-3 talking so highly of him, and then just a couple of games later it just all goes the other way. It's just the joys and blows of being of an English Premier League manager. But like, they've been doing really well. They're missing a striker, Damien, and I think every pundit has mentioned this, that have talked about Arsenal over the last number of months. And with Gabriel Jesus now out with an ACL injury for the rest of the season, he will have to dip his toes into the transfer market and sign a striker. There's no doubt about it. We see Kai Havertz, for all how great he is outside the box, he's not too good at it inside the box. You know, he's got eight league goals this season, but Arsenal, the way they play and the amount of chances that they create for their front players, he should be hitting 12, 13 goals, a bit like the likes of Salah, Haaland, Isak. You need a player. If Arsenal have any ambition of winning the Premier League this season, they need a player to be hitting those goals. They can't rely on set pieces for the whole entire season. Teams will be able to try and cut that out and manage it. Having said that, Spurs weren't able to do that last night.
And listen, Arsenal is one of those clubs, a number of clubs that Evan Ferguson has been linked with. But realistically, if Mikel Arteta has Premier League ambitions, Ferguson isn't the fit at the moment to go in and replace Gabriel Jesus.
No, I don't believe so. No, first of all, he lacks match sharpness, match fitness. And if Arsenal have ambitions of Premier League, no, you wouldn't be looking for the likes of Evan Ferguson. I really don't think he'd even play in that system, because he would need 6-8 weeks to get up to speed first and foremost, and Arsenal just don't have that time to be able to do that. They'd need somebody that has hit the ground running, that is performing very, very well in Europe so far. The likes of Isak, which obviously Newcastle will not sell, but somebody that will hit those goals straight away as soon as he arrives in the Emirates. And unfortunately for Ireland and Evan Ferguson himself, he just wouldn't be able to do that at this moment in time.
Okay, let's go to Old Trafford, Manchester United. In English Premier League action tonight, Southampton, the visitors, Peter Smith is there. Hiya, Peter.
Good evening to you all, everyone.
It's good to talk to you as always. We're alluding there to the fickle nature of football, as you have witnessed firsthand in your career as a broadcaster. Ruben Amorim gets a great result at Anfield for Manchester United, follows it up with a great result at the Emirates for the FA Cup, albeit on penalties. And it seems very swiftly the mood music has changed. And is it a more positive Old Trafford that you sit in tonight?
Well, I think he has to beat Southampton tonight to try and turn the season around a little bit, or to have some sort of platform, because I think the big story will be United up to 12th if they do beat the bottom club tonight. And then they'll be facing another mid-table side in Brighton on Sunday. You would expect United to win this game tonight. They've come into the game on the back of 3 consecutive home defeats. That's the first time this has happened since 1979-80 season under Dave Sexton. They haven't lost 4 games at home since 1930. Southampton have the worst ever Premier League record after 20 games. Sunderland, I think in 2006, had the same number of points after 20 games, but Southampton's goal difference is inferior to the Wearsiders. So you would expect a home win tonight and the potential to kick on a little bit. Because if they can win tonight and against Brighton on Sunday, on the back of that cup win at Arsenal, albeit on penalties, but a very good performance against Liverpool and Anfield, it has to be said. You know, maybe they can start looking up the table. Who knows, maybe challenging for Europa Conference League football next season, which would be an achievement, bearing in mind some of the nonsense that we've been looking at on the pitch this season.
Yeah, results aside and the need for some momentum, how crucial for Ruben Amorim is it for the transfer window to close or for the Marcus Rashford situation to be resolved one way or the other? Because presumably his inclusion or absence from a squad tonight will dominate his pre-match press conference, his performance, lack of performance, whatever it is, will dominate his post-match press conference. So that's a headache surely this manager needs off his agenda at this stage.
Yeah, but he's been saying the same thing all along about Marcus Rashford as Ruben Amorim. He's not really changed his tune on it at all. And whilst he'll take a loaded question, and I do like him for that very fact that he doesn't sort of like shy away from strong questions that are delivered by the media, you know, he's quite clear on the Rashford situation, and I think we've got to sort of move on from it, really. If Rashford doesn't want to play United, then let him go elsewhere. There's a lot of talk about him potentially going to Italian football and playing for AC Milan on loan. Marcus Rashford needs to do his talking out on the football pitch. He's a talented, talented footballer. He's outstanding. He can be one of the best in the Premier League. But he's only got himself to blame at times for poor performances on the pitch, not helping himself, posting pictures of him having a birthday bash in the centre of town after Manchester City had won by a huge scoreline at Old Trafford, not helping himself, being late for a training session when he went over to Belfast for a weekend, then he came back slightly the worse for wear and too much alcohol inside him. He's a professional player. If you want to be the best, show it on the field of play and cut the nonsense out off the field of play. I don't really think that anybody's overly worried about Marcus Rashford anymore at Old Trafford. There's an acceptance that he'll either go out on loan, he'll leave permanently, or if he does get back in the team, he needs to show what he can do and really discover the form that made him a top quality star.
Okay, Peter, we might check in with you again before the end of the programme for team news potentially. Peter Smith joining us from Old Trafford. Conan, before I let you go, we look at the landscape of the table and, you know, listen, there's an awful lot of football still to be played. Liverpool, 18 games to go. They navigated somewhat of a banana skin against Nottingham Forest. And when we look at it from a Liverpool perspective, is there a case that can be made now that what points they will drop, your Arsenals, your Forests, your Newcastles, your Chelseas, your Cities will just simply drop more between now and season's end?
Yeah, I really do think the next couple of weeks are vital for Liverpool. They have two out of three really tough games, away to Brentford, away to Bournemouth. I think if they can win both of those games coming up to the 2nd of February, I think it's theirs to lose. Even now you could say that already, Damien, that they're just performing so well. I know the game against Nottingham Forest, they were really poor in that first half, but having said that, the second half they were brilliant, and if it wasn't for Matt Sells, I think Liverpool would have won comfortably in the game. I just do think the teams below them will drop points. Like I said, if Arsenal don't get a centre forward, I think they'll continue to drop points here and there. The team that are performing better than anybody though is Newcastle, and five wins in a row, they're absolutely flying. Alexander Isak doing an amazing job up front for them. But again, I can't see them pushing Liverpool. So okay, I think it is Liverpool's to lose, and especially if they can win two of the next three games, as I said, away to Brentford. And the other team, I can't remember what I said.
Now listen, we have it all on tape. But the main thing is Liverpool fans listening in, you're confident from their perspective. Conan, listen, thanks so much for being with us, as always. Enjoy the matches tonight, and thanks for your time.
Thanks, David.
Conan Byrne with us there, Peter Smith in advance of that. A lot to come on the programme still. We're going to chat rugby in 2 minutes. Stay with us.
Game on.
Rugby.
And you're welcome back to the programme. So it's round four of the Investec Champions Cup to enjoy this weekend. And likewise in the Challenge Cup, and Michael Corcoran, our rugby commentators with me in studio, Marcus Horan joins us as well. Gentlemen, good evening to you both.
Damien.
Hey, Damien.
How are you doing, lads? Thanks for being with us. We'll come to the matches themselves and some of the talking points in a minute, but Michael, like the format has been somewhat lamented. We've maybe don't quite have the enthusiasm around the competition that we've had in previous weeks, but this is the weekend ultimately that you feel it'll burst into life. Permutations at stake and the roadmap to home round of 16 games and everything else to be decided. So if it doesn't happen this weekend, it'll never happen.
Well, yes, like there's no point in lamenting what could have been or you know, crying and beating her chest about the way it was years ago and all this kind of stuff, whatever. I mean, it is what it is. We are where we are. I sound like a politician. But the situation is, yes, it's pretty incredible that there are so many things undecided. I think there are only six teams, I think, have qualified for the round of 16 in the Investec Champions Cup. So quite a lot at stake. This coming weekend, a lot to play for in terms of a lot of the matches. We're in a situation, obviously, where it's not ideal. Say, for example, if we just talk about Munster for a second, not ideal from their point of view. You know, they're away to Northampton. They're second at the moment in Pool 3. But the other two teams who are in contention in that pool, Saracens and Cass, don't play till Sunday afternoon. So they'll know exactly what they need to do there. I mean, normally, back in those days, all the matches kicked off at the same time, so you didn't really know. But yeah, look, quite a lot of stake this weekend. That's the reality about it, champ.
Marcus, we look at that. Listen, Michael's brought Munster up. We'll look at it from a Munster perspective, away to Northampton Saints, the James Downey Derby. Can I get away with calling it that?
You could, John.
Like, I suppose from
He's
a
had
Munster.
So many clubs.
Well. He's probably listening. I suppose from a Munster perspective, Marcus, you know, you can't worry an awful lot about Saracens and Cast on Sunday. That, like, this squad and the message over the course of the week will be, we need to do what we need to do in order to ensure that we're in the conversation. And is the form line improving along the lines that you'd be somewhat hopeful for a result this weekend?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think Munster always, you know, they have a love affair with this competition, even though, as we lament about the format of it, is very different to what we knew. But yeah, look, I think more than just trying to get something out of the game, what I'd love to see from this Munster squad is consistency of performance. I think, you know, the first 20 minutes of that game last week, you were really worried that some of the guys, the handling errors and stuff like that. But to get into the game and to turn it around the way they did, I think the big test for this squad is to follow it up the week after now. And, you know, I know from commentating with Michael there last season, we saw some poor performances and then a good performance the week after, and then it dipped again. So it's really about trying to gain the momentum that they produced in the second half last week and bring it on the road with them, because I think in some circles they're probably being written off, and even now they're probably written off an away last 16 game, and that's always been a difficulty. Then, you know, you're kind of writing yourself off then for the rest of the tournament. But the difference a home quarter final can make if Munster can get a win over there, and I think, you know, this whole narrative just trying to get something out of the game has to go out the window. And I don't think these players are looking at that. I think they're going to try and win and just try and build on what they did last week, you know.
As from a coaching perspective or a management perspective, how do you harness that momentum? And, like, what can you do to try and maximise the potential for it to live on this week?
Yeah, it's funny because, like, You go and think, like, reward the players there that were involved in that and who produced that. But then you've got, in typical Munster fashion over the last couple of seasons, you've got guys returning from injury. And, you know, the likes of a Peter O'Mahony, you're going, you know, it's European Cup day. You're going to have to bring these guys back in. So you're trying to balance that momentum of and rewarding those guys that produced good performances, but also bringing back some of the big guns. And, look, I think, you know, if you're talking to any of those guys, and I was lucky to interview Ian Costello for one of the URC games, and just, you know, they're hearing all the noise from the outside, but they seem like a very focused group. And I think with everything that's happened to them over the last 12 months and even more, you know, it's really, they've kind of circled the wagons. And I think one of the comments he made was they never got too low when people were on top of them, but they certainly never got too high either when they win, particularly last week. So I think they're probably on a very even keel going into this, and without losing the run of themselves, they're going over to a team who beat them last year, who have have gone toe to toe with other big European stalwarts. So they're under no illusion. They're going into the backyard of a very, very strong team. So I think that's probably the positive for them, that they haven't overstretched themselves, you know.
But Michael, we talk about the, you know, the European ambition that resonates in the DNA of Munster. That it's one of these weekends that it's just made for a Munster smash and grab.
It is, and you know, I stood in this studio with Bernard Jackman last week, and you know, they were playing Cyrus and Seaman, Thomond Park last week, who, you know, had a better scrum, had a better lineup, they were better at the breakdown. It was one of those perfect storm type moments last week in terms of them trying to win that one. Huge game for them this week. You know, if Peter Manny is fit out, he's going to come back in. So his experience, they're a completely different team altogether with him involved. And Conor Murray there as well. Jack Crowley, a bit of a bounce in his toes now again, playing around the, you know, knocking around the place as well too. They still have problems. It's interesting, you know, one of the coaching consultants they have inside there at the moment is Chris Boyd, the former director of rugby at Northampton. So he will certainly have the kind of inside intel in terms of the way Northampton operate. They're a very, very well coached team. Phil Dowson is brilliant. Sam Vesti, their assistant coach there as well. And they just get this competition, like unlike a lot of other teams. It's a huge task for them, to be fair. I felt that for them to progress, they had to win one of the two games. Now, they won last week. I think they need something out of this game. Whether it's going to be good enough to win it or not, I don't know. But they will need to score tries to win this match. This is not going to be a 15-12 game. Because the one thing about Northampton is they do score an awful lot of tries in any of the matches they play, particularly at home. And they just get it, their fans get it, it's going to be a raucous atmosphere, and I think Munster will go there with a bounce in their step there on the basis of what they did last week. But they've got to build on that. They're creating an awful lot of chances, as Marcus knows, but they have to put away chances, they have to score tries, and if Munster score tries, they'll be competitive.
We'll stick with Saturday, Leinster against Bath, the Aviva Stadium, which is where I know you'll be for Saturday Sport on Radio 1. You know, the clash of the league leaders on either side of the Irish Sea. Like, Leinster have their business done in terms of advancing to the round of 16. Like, is it the added cherry? Like, how important are seedings? How important is it for them to try and get a grip on the top seeding? Or is it just simply a case that having the Aviva Stadium behind them for the knockout stages is
they're one of the teams who qualified. There's somewhere in the region 40,000 tickets sold already for that game. I can't overstate strongly enough how important it is that Leinster win and qualify as one of the top couple of seeds, as in one. Well, they can't be unless Bordeaux or lose out, or Toulouse lose out. So the top two seeds will have home advantage as long as they're winning all the way up to and including the semi-final of the competition. So Leinster don't want to mess it up, if you understand what I mean, by slipping down the rankings. Even though they may put in a good performance on Saturday and win and get the 5 points there, there's one of the other pools there, I think is the pool with Toulon involved in that one. They're playing Sale, and again, that's a match that I think that's on. I think it may very well be the last game on Sunday. Depending on how that game turns out on Sunday, could affect the scenario if Leinster don't do the business. So Leinster have to do the business at home. Yes, they've qualified for the round of 16, but from a point of view of getting to the final and progressing and winning this competition, home advantage is absolutely ginormous. Over 75% of the matches in the knockout stages are won by a home team. I think it could be as high as 80%. So Leinster have to win this weekend. Yes, they've done the hard job so far, but they have to win this week and do so comfortably.
And Marcus, they've been stung by this in the URC and other competitions in recent years, that it's not a point you'd imagine that Leo Cullen and Jacques Nienaber have had to labour over the course of the week. That the players know the importance of this themselves.
They do, and look, I agree with Michael to a point, but I think in some ways, if Leinster have to go the hard road, I think they're a type of team that are capable of doing it, are capable of going away and winning, you know, a quarter final away from home, and I think it might stand to them more if they get to a semi-final situation. I think what has suffered is the comfort of home in previous years and that run. I think people talk about that resilience and talking about having to dog it out, and you know, even if they got to a stage where they're written off by certain people, do you know what I mean? I mean, if you look at it, and I think Michael mentioned them there, Toulouse and Bordeaux. They're just incredible to watch. They're just like, if you were calling it right now, you'd be, if they avoid each other, they're two teams that would go to a final and be an incredible final. But that's what you kind of want to get to, is if Leinster can be written off in some way. But I do, in the grand scheme of things, and I just think, you know, from a statement point of view, you know, it's more of a performance on Saturday, I think, against Bath. You know, I think the result will take care of itself. My worry with Leinster is, and having watched them in the URC, is how incredible their defence is. But I just think scoring tries is going to be so important, particularly against French teams, and particularly if you do rely on your defence in the last 20 minutes, is you need to be able to score to put pressure on a Toulouse or a Bordeaux. And that'd be my worry with Leinster at the moment, is how well is their attack going? How well are they actually working on the attack when defence has been such a high priority? And, you know, if we see a little bit of that on Saturday against Bath, where they you know, they have a bit of freedom, they're qualified, can they throw the ball around and score some tries and get those quality backs moving? And that would be a real, improvement in their performances from the season so far, you know.
As always is the case, the clock is the biggest opponent we have between now and the end of the chat. Michael, just on Ulster, it's a stick that has been used in some quarters to beat the tournament, that, you know, they've had three heavy defeats, but yet they could still prolong their Champions Cup season based on admittedly unlikely scenarios. They're at home to Exeter tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock. Realistically, they'll be looking for a win that will secure Challenge Cup rugby at best, and maybe try and regain a little bit of momentum and use that as a competition to play themselves potentially back into form.
I have a sneaking feeling they could actually get in to get up as far as fourth place there in that pool. They're minus 89 at the moment. They're playing the Chiefs. I looked at the teams there earlier. Ulster have gone full bore in terms of the players and the team that they've picked. The Chiefs have picked, I'll call them the baby Chiefs. I'm not sure what a baby Chiefs, yeah, what, you know, but it's kind of largely a second string team, to be perfectly fair about it. I think Ulster could, if they get off to a good start, Ulster could do a number there, because the team who are above them at the moment are the Sharks, and the Sharks are away to Bordeaux. And with the greatest respect to John Plumtree and the Sharks, I obviously don't know what their team is going to be, but I don't see them getting anything at all from Bordeaux. So you're in a scenario where if Ulster do the business at home tomorrow night in Ravenhill, which I think they're quite capable of doing, they could hop up into fourth place, and that could get them into the round of 16. But then they'd be away against one of the top couple of teams there in that pool. I think Bordeaux will get full points against the Sharks, but the onus is on Ulster. They have an outside chance, but they've got to perform on the pitch.
Marcus, to finish, Connacht away to Cardiff at the same time tomorrow. Their progression in the Challenge Cup already guaranteed, and it's that mirror situation with Leinster. It's the importance of ensuring you're going through the front door as much as is possible between now and tournament end.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, you know, it's exciting times for Connacht. I think, you know, the news of their sellout for the Munster game in Castlebar, I think that's what they've got to aspire to. You know, if they get a home European Cup game, that can they do something like that, where they bring it to somewhere like that again, and get the crowds? Because, you know, we've seen their journey in Europe before, and albeit was the similar competition, the Challenge Cup, back in the day, and going on a journey, because... But it'll be a real test of the squad as well, because, you know, you talk about Ulster there in the same breath. Both teams have to look after their URC places as well for the following season. So, you know, is it a poison chalice for the likes of an Ulster to keep going in Europe when they might need all the energy into URC? But for Connacht, look, it's a team they know well. And I think while that's, you know, if you're looking at... past performances, Connacht would be favourites for that one a little bit. But Cardiff, like, you know, I think the danger when you know each other so well, you know, and could be a bit of complacency, the fact that you're qualified. But I think the reward for Connacht is too big, and the players are well aware of that they could have another big day, maybe up in Castlebar. I'm not speaking for the GAA or anything, but, you know, it could be a great occasion for Connacht rugby if they get a home European game in a good season. stadium. So exciting one, and I would tip Connacht to do the job there, you know.
Okay. Marcus, thanks so much for being with us. Marcus Horan there, Michael Corcoran with us in studio, and I look forward to seeing you wrapped up at the Aviva on Saturday evening.
I'd be getting me one to Woolies.
Have you gone down the road of a heated Gilet? This has been my go-to topic with Tony.
I haven't. No, Matt. I think it's an age thing, and I haven't reached that age yet.
Well, I feel like I haven't.
Okay, well, that's fair enough.
We'll wait and see.
Each is their own.
Michael Corcoran, thank you as always. We are going to look ahead to a busy weekend in basketball after the break. Stay with us.
Game on 2FM.
Andrew, welcome back to the programme. I've been accused of bias. We haven't even started the discussion already. Orla Keeling is with me in studio to look ahead to a big weekend for basketball. This is, like, I'm looking at the fixture list that Basketball Ireland sent out. It starts with, like, the Irish Wheelchair Association National Cup Final on Friday. It goes all the way through to the Paddy O'Connor National Cup Final for women on Sunday evening. And it is just, like, this is the showpiece weekend of all that is great about basketball in Ireland and the volunteers who make the clubs in Ireland what they are.
Absolutely, Damien. You took the words out of my mouth. I'm not sure if you're going to bring up was it the biggest or most important weekend of the year. That could have sparked a debate between the semi-finals last weekend and this weekend. But look, it's an incredible weekend. It's amazing that there's so much attention from the media and from sources that we don't always get in the basketball community. But you're right to highlight the volunteers because they do Trojan work behind the scenes to make the weekends like this happen.
Yeah, I've seen that firsthand. So we'll chat, like, the Pat Duffy National Cup Final, 8 o'clock tip-off in the National Basketball Arena, Colester against UCC Demons. And, like, it's unusual in a cup like this that the cream has really risen to the top, and we do have the two best teams in the country. We can make a strong case for that, you know, going up against each other.
Yeah, it's the 1-2 punch of what's the men's Super League table at the moment. And as you say, that's the magic of what is the cup. It is this magical competition that I think is one of the most attractive competitions in Ireland of any sport, because you can have the Davids versus the Goliaths, and you could be bottom of the table in relegation, but you could be in a cup final. But you've now got two of the best teams in the country going off against one another. You've got the reigning champions from last year. Colester haven't been there since 2019. So for them to go up this weekend would be a huge game.
Is it a bit of a clash of styles in terms of what we can expect, or, you know, the strengths that the two teams have to offer?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, you're looking at Colester, their six games, they've scored over 100 points. You know, Conor Meaney made a great point in the Irish Examiner piece last weekend. They're probably the fastest control pace that we've seen that Demons actually had about 10 years ago. They went on this crazy run of winning titles and went unbeaten for a season. So we're kind of seen a bit of a clash of styles as well. Colester will be a lot smaller compared to what Demons have, and what is Elijah Tillman, the biggest big man in the league. Carl's an absolute force on inside. So it'll be very interesting to see the battle of small ball versus big ball now Saturday night.
And it's odd that we would be in a situation like this where we're talking about UCC Demons and the momentum they've had in recent years, but ultimately Colester, with the form they've had in recent weeks, like, the defending champions are most likely going to go in as the underdogs.
They are. You're going up against a Colester team who are 14 games now unbeaten on the trot. Demons last year, Danny O'Mahony, head coach, said it himself, they kind of focused too much on the cup and didn't bring enough consistency to the league, and they've gone after that this year. But Colester are an unbelievable force this year. They've managed to click. I think that's due to a number of different factors, but you have a situation now that the reigning cup champions are back in the final, which is not always a commonplace as well. But now that they're potentially going into this game, I think, as underdogs.
Yeah, we were alluding off air. Like, I'll be transparent. I have a Colester under 13 player at home who is going mental that she has to get to the National Basketball Arena. So I'm completely compromised, because, like, if it gets back to her that I didn't tip Colester to win. So I'll let you be objective. So would you expect, like, who's going to come out on top in terms of the men? Or is the smart money on Colester?
I think so. But Demons are, I likened them last week to nearly the Tyrones of Gaelic football, that if they go down, you know, if they go down and have a bit of adversity early on in the game, they'll come back. So I think it could be close. I'm going to tip Colester just with their league form. I don't think we can overlook scoring 100 points in the last four or six games. They scored 93 points in their semi-final against Aina, which is an absolute achievement in itself as well. So I'm going to tip Colester, but it could be a close game. We could, like, with the magic of the cup, players would love a blowout, but it could be 5-10 point difference.
And again, objectively speaking, like, for Colester to have two teams in the two National Cup finals, like, that is, that it just doesn't happen. Such is the depth of quality that exists in the club game at the minute, that it is, it's a remarkable achievement that, you know, they'll look to paint the National Basketball Arena orange and black all across the weekend.
They will, and it's actually never happened before, and I don't know will we see it again. You know, that's the magic again of that competition, that we've had great teams and clubs in the past that might have had strong teams on the men's and women's side, but for it to take this long to happen is it a testament to Leicester and what they're doing in the court. And as you say, I do expect the arena to be fully orange.
When we look at like Liffey Celtics against Leicester, half five tip off in the Paddy O'Connor final on Sunday evening, like these are two teams that, like, there's a slip of paper between them realistically in you know, their stats in recent weeks.
Yeah, you're correct, and I was actually at their game in December. It ended in an overtime win for Leicester, but won a game that I think Liffey would feel like they left behind. Chatting to Michelle Clark during the week, you know, they've won a number of titles in the last couple of years, two cup, one Super League title as well. And, you know, yes, they haven't really maybe had the on league form that Liffey Celtics have had, as they lead the league and Leicester are third, but they've been there, they've won games, and she was describing that as when you've been there and you've won it, you always feel like you have time. So you've got a really talented Liffey Celtics team, but you've got a confident Leicester team that have been there, done it before.
And to speak about time, like, these things can all be cyclical in terms of groups of players come together, and if you're lucky enough, you can entice a couple of professionals along the way. But like, you look, Liffey Celtics, with the underage success that they've had in recent years, they have been the team to beat. And the challenge for the current crop is to take that now to senior level.
Yeah, exactly. They've been, anyone that knows basketball in Dublin or actually at national level knows that Liffey Celtics are the powerhouse. They've been dominating for the last decade. They just haven't managed to kind of bring that up to senior level. They obviously won the same title in 2019, and Sorica Tiernan was there on the day. She was 18 years of age, and now she's 24, and she's a veteran of that team, which is hard to say when you're 24 years of age leading a team. And they just haven't had maybe the consistency in coaching and players. But when you've got the likes to Sorica Tiernan, you've also got Ciara Bracken that's on the bench with currently out with an injury, that have progressed through the system, and a number of underage girls like Clara Boyce is also on the bench injured, that'll be huge role models within the club. But for the volunteers, as you mentioned previously, to see that now growing and kind of pushing forward, you'd love to see Liffey Celtics capitalise on this.
And the issue there could be the depth that they have at their disposal, potentially, compared to, like, you know, they have game changers that they can spring. Maybe Leicester don't quite have that.
Well, you talk about game changers, you've got your first two substitutions are two Irish senior international players, and Hazel Finn and Rachel Housens. Like, when I was there in December in their game, I couldn't believe the first two subs, and what a 1-2 punch to bring on in the first quarter. Carol Kilbride brought them again on the third quarter in the semi-final versus Waterford, when Waterford were trying to rally back and give something to this, to put up against the Liffey Celtics team. But you not only get the likes of the talent that is there with Rachel and Hazel, but Hazel is a Duracell bunny. What she does, she contributed 12 points last weekend, but on the defensive end, what she does, she picks up point guards, she would be trying to rush them, turnover, that's what she'd be going after. And as you say, that depth is just not there with any other team in the country.
Okay, so Leicester for the men, Liffey Celtics for the women.
I mean, you'd love to see Leicester do the double, but it's going to be tight. I think it'll be a really, really tight game. I think with the level of depth that is there now with Liffey Celtics, I'm going to tip in their favour, but again, could be very close.
But the big thing with this is, you look at the sessions across the weekend, like, you literally could set up camp at 11 o'clock in the morning in Talla and still be there enjoying quality action at 10 o'clock at night. That, like, it's so important for a sport which is such a high participation level, an indoor sport in a country that is decimated by the weather time and time again, that, like, you really need to harness a weekend like this. And it's, you know, it's easily accessible for people. Get out there, enjoy it.
Absolutely, yeah. I think you've already tipped what I'm going to be doing all weekend is camping in Talla. And that's exactly what I did last week in Cork. But as you say, since COVID and probably the Last Dance documentary, basketball has exploded in Ireland. It's a very exciting time for the clubs and also the national teams.
Yeah, and you know, listen, you know, it's one of those, it's like, you see, you'd be far too young to remember Field of Dreams. You know, you've built it and they'll come. And like, this is it firsthand. Bring people out. Irish internationals on show, really top quality action on show. And it's such a brilliant live environment as well, that particularly for kids, they love the noise, they love the colour, everything else. That, listen, it's a penalty kick for me in terms of, like, expose them to it and they'll just fall in love with it. So
absolutely,
you and I are converted.
Absolutely.
Right, listen, I might sit back and relax and enjoy it over the weekend. Orla, thanks so much for being with us. Orla Keeling in studio to preview National Basketball Cup final weekend, and plenty of coverage no doubt across Saturday Sport on Saturday afternoon. We are going to finish the programme as we do of a Thursday with only one man.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Shep, how are you?
I'm doing great, Damien. How are you doing today, buddy?
I've so far managed to navigate like the jingle and everything. Like, this is as slick as I've been dealing with you in quite some time. We touched very briefly last week about, like, obviously the playoffs and the wildcard rounds are underway on the road to New Orleans for the Super Bowl. And listen, it's starting to take shape and probably needs to be. Like, are these playoffs just a little bit big and unwieldy? And, you know, do you do enough to cut it down in terms of the quality that's on action? But we are well and truly in the business end of this now, this weekend.
No, we really are. I mean, I think, you know, the best game of last weekend was the Commanders and the Bucks. You know, the Sunday night game. It gets decided on a doinked in field goal on the last play of the game. You got a big upset with the rookie quarterback and Jaden Daniels with the win. And so now they get to go take on Detroit. You know, we've been talking about how good they have been. And they got a chance to rest this week. And then the other game is the Rams going to fly across the country and take on the Eagles. The Rams looked phenomenal in their Monday night playoff game. Of course, relocated to Arizona because of all the wildfires that are happening in Southern California. So, you know, it was kind of one of those things where, you know, were the Rams going to be completely distracted or were they going to be completely motivated by what was going on back in their hometown? And they were, from the coin toss, they were motivated and they just destroyed the Vikings. And so never really had a chance there. And then over on the AFC side, you've got, you know, the Chiefs and the Texans. Texans really pulled an upset last week, knocking off the Chargers. Justin Herbert could not stop throwing the football to people in the other color jersey. And so now the Texans are going to roll up and try to knock off Kansas City. We've talked before, Damien, this hasn't been a phenomenal year for the Chiefs. They're not destroying people, yet they only lost two games all season, you know, and one of them they sat all their players. So, but then really Sunday evening, I think, is the game that everybody has circled: Baltimore and Buffalo in the 2-3 matchup in the AFC. Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, these are going to be your number one and number two MVP candidates. This one's just really got the potential to be a special football game on Sunday night.
It's interesting, though. Like, you look at the bracket, and with the exception of Washington, who were six seeds going into the wild card round, beating Tampa Bay, who were third seeds, like, it has completely gone to form in the wild card round. Like, how much should we read into the seedings in advance of the divisional playoffs? Or, like, are we into a territory now where we've kind of cut the fat off it and we're going to get into the real tight business of it from here on in?
Yes. I mean, look, the Commanders were good all season. You know, they've been bad for a long time. They, you know, kind of had a last place schedule or whatever. And then, you know, they've got this, you know, situation working with Jaden Daniels. But they were in the division with the Eagles. And so, you know, they were pretty tight with them most of the season, which is why, you know, the Eagles were the two seed because they won the NFC East and had a better record. But, you know, I mean, the Commanders beating the Bucks wasn't a giant upset. I mean, the NFC South, the division that the Bucks and the Saints play in, I mean, let's just be honest, it's really not very good. It usually hasn't been here the last couple of years. I think the big shocker was what happened in Minnesota over the last two seasons. I mean, the last 2 weeks of the season, they won 14 games. And then, you know, they don't win. They lose the last game of the regular season to the Lions and then just really get outplayed, you know, Monday night. And they were kind of the really disappointing team, I think, in the playoffs. But I mean, I think in the AFC, the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Bills, those have been the three favorite teams all season. The Lions have been the favorite team in the NFC all season. The Lions and the Eagles, they're still there. So, I mean, I think that the top teams now, if one of the ones loses this week, I think that would be big time news, you know?
Okay. And we'll wait and see how that. Yeah, listen, they've been sitting waiting, so you know you can have that argument over momentum versus the rest period. It's interesting that while, you know, the fixation for 14 teams or whatever it is on the road to the Super Bowl, the fixation for so many others is the replacement of head coaches. And like, it is, maybe it's just that there's so much happening at the one time, but it seems to be a massive turnover in terms of the men who are steering these franchises forward.
Every year, it's somewhere between 6 and 8 teams. You know, the Saints and the Jets fired their coaches during the season, and a bunch of folks did it, you know, at the end of the year on Black Monday, like we talked about last week. Mm. The big news this week, though, was the Cowboys and parted ways with Mike McCarthy. And they made the playoffs a whole lot of times when he was there. They never made it, you know, got back to the Super Bowl and won there. He's going to be, you know, I think a highly sought-after coach. And the, you know, one of the rumors going around now is that Jerry Jones, the Cowboys, you know, very famous owner, has spoken to Deion Sanders, the prolific Neon Dion over at the University of Colorado to see if he's potentially interested. I have no idea, Damien, how that would work out, but I know we would be talking about it quite a lot if it does happen.
The other thing, which no doubt plenty of people are talking about, are their trips to the UK and Berlin, and these fixtures are all starting to take shape. And listen, this is just now part and parcel of the NFL season, that you're going to have these games around Europe. I suppose the big question from our point of view is the list has come out and Croke Park and the Steelers aren't still listed on it yet, but you would imagine that's a formality at this point, would think.
It has to be. I mean, this is probably the fifth or sixth time we've talked about it. It's just the Steelers have said they want to do it. It's just trying to figure out, you know, their schedules and lawyers and all this other stuff. But yeah, they're going to play a game in Berlin this year. It'll be the first game in Berlin. They played a game in Germany earlier this season. They do one every once in a while in Germany. And obviously all the London games. Again, they've taken a systematic approach to playing games in Europe and adding more and trying different configurations with the schedule. And they've all worked so far. So I think they're going to keep adding games, you know, on that side of the Atlantic and keep growing the fan base. I mean, it's what they want to do.
Mm. Before we finish, you've pointed out to me in an email earlier, today is the 15th anniversary of you having an association with this fine organization. And you have persisted with us and we have persisted with you. And it's been a beautiful transatlantic friendship.
It's been phenomenal. I honestly can't believe it's gone on this long. Andrew O'Connor, our producer.
He's outside the window tonight. I don't know if he's listening, but he's outside the window anyway.
Well, yeah, I hope he's listening. No, I mean, he's getting paid to listen, right? Yeah. But then, yeah, you know, back at a long time ago, there was a show that aired on Saturday mornings called Ballbusters, and I was asked to be on the show. And here we are all these years later and all these Thursdays later and talking American sports still.
We could be still here in another – I won't have retired mathematically in 15 years. We could be still here in 15 years.
That would be look, I hope for both of our sakes that we are.
Across the country, people are smashing radios as we speak. Shep, lovely to talk to you as always. Enjoy the action and we'll chat, no doubt. Actually, I'm not here next Thursday, but we'll chat one of these future Thursdays. Look after yourself. Jeff Shepherd with us there from the States, bringing the programme to a conclusion. Laura Lee Davies, our broadcast coordinator tonight. Andrew O'Connor produced the programme. Betta's on the way after 7. Jenny's on the way after 9. Dan's on the way after 11 from Damien O'Mara. All of us here till we chat tomorrow night at 6. Good night.